This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Scott Moore. He's an artist and activist, and he's here to talk to us about the exhibition Beautiful Midden, Art and Artifact. It's at the Taos Center for the Arts. It runs through the 24th of September. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.
We had you on the air just about 2 years ago, and you were talking about this project, which was at a much earlier stage. And I think it's so interesting, just to begin with, it's kind of an oxymoron, beautiful midden. Midden means trash heap. It's the archaeological term for trash heap. So you're talking about beautiful trash heap. What's the project about? What were its origins?
Well, initially it was a call from Amigos Bravos, and when Brian Shield was the director, wanted to put together a artistic inquiry into a plot of land that was at the end of County Road C-110 outside of Taos, where there was a lot of dumping into deep arroyos and household trash and excessive ammunition discharge that was ending up in the waterways. At the time, myself and a group of other people from Taos, teachers and artists, got together and put in a proposal, which was accepted. At the time, Natalie Carlton was part of the project who coined the term Beautiful Midden. And to me, it was always something about this potential to invert a situation, to kind of take something that is apparent or even at a taboo status when we first kind of entered into this work, and invert it and bring it out and make it something manageable and make it part of a community conversation was the real impetus for the project. And with that, we're dedicated to using art, the visual arts, music, dance, poetry, whatever might be involved to bring this into the a level of a real community conversation.
It's a tough project to begin with because you're really talking across different cultures. One of them is a culture of ecological health, which means let's keep our waterways clean, let's really care about animals, let's care about toxicity. The other one is a culture which dumps stuff in the trash and then shoots it to pieces.
Yes, well, it's been going on for a long time. I mean, we've gathered this by just talking with the locals and people who grew up there. And it's a pastime, and it's a big part of the recreational activities in Taos. And these sites have traditionally been multi-use places, and until the Beautiful Midden formed and started kind of creating a small provocative act, there was no art in the landscape. So what you said is true, and because it is often a pastime, an old way of recreating, it was also really important to the project that we approach us without shaming, without any kind of retribution, without wagging any fingers. It was more important to really hold up a mirror as clearly and as graciously as possible, but not to flinch. And I think that refers back to the term midden as an archaeological term for kind of creating a distance to look at a way a people lived and their lifestyle and what their ideas may have been. That's all apparent. And to create that kind of distance, an archaeological distance, was pretty critical from the start. Yes, for one, I think it helped us approach things and create artworks that responded to things without a judgment, but also we also had to find a way to keep it effervescent. And it is, there's a lot of kind of darkness and a lot of parts that were revealed about our community that just didn't end with the trash. And for us, it started to echo back of times of, you know, there's extensive poverty that has existed in Taos County for perhaps 400 years. kind of being removed from the centers of power. Things kind of developed there in a way that were very independent. And early on, a lot of that had to do with recycling before recycling was recycling. Debris and trash and discards ending up in the arroyo, which is not just a Taos County problem.
There was a period, namely almost all of human history, when whatever you dumped returned to the earth, because whatever you dumped was made of natural materials. And, I mean, if you ate your, you know, if you ate off of a banana leaf, you'd throw away your plate, right? You know, if you used sticks, whatever. But vinyl sofas and cars and antifreeze and solvents and lead and all of those things are so relatively recent. And so you can't, you know, it's like you have new materials, but you're still using the old ways.
That's perfectly right for what we've witnessed. And so a part of the project and a part of the exhibition, which is kind of a real focused overview of almost 5 years of work now, part of that is the changing nature of trash, part of the exhibition. And it was an assemblage of four different generations of trash that I've personally pulled out of arroyos and kind of isolated it and spoke to it in that way. I mean, 100 years ago, four generations ago, the trash was fairly benign. And if you have a trash, a can river in the back of your house into the arroyo like I do, it's been there for 100 years now, and it's still there, and it's just kind of undisturbed. But through the generations and ending up today, what we're looking at is exactly this increased nature of toxicity, the amount of trash, which is also due to the packaging, but also something within the American culture. I think it's kind of across the board that it's so easy to dispose of things, to throw it out, to use it once. And you know, I've seen this everywhere I've lived, and used to live in Brooklyn and leave New York City and pass the Staten Island landfill there, which was a giant monument to our disposable culture. So when we get back to a rural area like Taos County and see this same practice going on, what it became clear was there's not a lot of awareness or consideration of the increased toxicity, especially now with electronics and the solvents and everything. It's true they've been there for perhaps 20, 30 years, but with the electronics, are very problematic and probably have the deadliest load of toxins that could enter into our waterways and food chains. And it becomes especially problematic when these items are shot and blown into unretrievable smaller fragments that end up getting buried and washed and disseminated through the waterways, through the animals that happen to accidentally ingest this, and then the food chain disseminates it even further. And everything that happens in Taos County is coming downstream.
How has that been studied? In other words, you've got an old, let's say, computer, and it's in a landfill. It's in, not in a landfill, it's in an arroyo. It gets shot up. Pieces of it go into, because even dry arroyos are wet sometimes when it rains, so there's a lot of wash of that. Animals nibble on certain things. So what happens? Like, what do we know about where stuff that starts in an arroyo and gets shot up? Where does it end up? What does that cycle look like?
Well, from Taos County, a lot of it stays localized. If it's not immediately in a waterway, but what we have found, either a lot of this ends up directly in the flowing perennial rivers and streams, or in these arroyos that usually about this time of year, everything gets cleaned out with the flash floods, which happened three times in the arroyo near my home. We've been looking mostly at the lead situation because of the lead projectiles are predominantly lead, used here in Taos County. New Mexico doesn't have any laws regulating ammunition, or is there much awareness in general within the shooting culture here of that situation?
So tell us more about that situation. Lead bullets get shot, they end up on the ground. What happens then?
Well, they just don't end up as big chunks of lead, which would be difficult enough to remediate or to try to collect off the soil. What happens, our last piece of field work was a very focused and examination of this. And the strategy was to provide an intervention to shooters who never have a thought about their relationship to the environment or what kind of damage they might be doing. Every other kind of site-specific sculpture I put out was turned into a target. And after a while, it became clear that perhaps the best way to address this in our community was to create a sculpture that was designed to be shot, that was designed to harvest the lead ammunition and to impart some very basic information about lead poisoning. And perhaps this would be the first time that any shooter encountered something where they then had a tension between pulling that trigger and their relationship to the immediate environment and for all the generations that are to come. The idea kind of turned into creating a playful kind of carnivalesque shooting range. The safest thing that was ever shot in Taos County was our goal. And we also had to consider how would we create something that would harvest a variety of ballistics. We knew that everything was going to get thrown at it. So predominantly we created containers out of cooking woks, Chinese cooking woks with plywood faces that hung in a succession. And from a frontal view, there was the image of a target. And we also created spinning hands with white gloves, sort of hands up. And our banner served as a way to understand the relationship of that lead bullet firing out of your gun and in the potential toxins and detrimental health effects that it can have on yourself and your family and anybody else who's in this area of land. We set it up thinking we would probably have it for maybe 3 weeks. Immediately became clear after visiting it early in the morning after the initial sighting that it was taking a lot of fire. The 4th of July weekend was approaching and made arrangements pretty quickly to strike the piece and get it out and sort of begin our analyzing of what we had harvested. We had a mailbox with a safe loading table where people left comments about the piece, the shooters who were using it, which were curiously interesting and appreciative for providing what was at first a public service for the shooters, and then raising the whole public health issue, which the project overall is at the core of it really addressing.
Now, it's kind of amazing that any sculpture you put up gets shot to pieces, and then you actually make sculptures whose whole point is to be shot to pieces, and in fact, that happens. Are people particularly interested in shooting at art, or just basically anything that stands up?
I think because it was, and we declared it a sculpture, it was obviously an artwork, but it was something playful. We ask people to please discharge safely. The other pieces that I have mentioned that were in the landscape all got shot up as well. But I don't really think it needs to be a piece of artwork if it's more than 6 inches off the ground. I think that's kind of been a consistent
it gets shot.
Practice. It just gets shot at. I mean, any can, bottle, box. And I pulled a lot of things off the rim of the Rio Pueblo de Taos. One of those is featured as a video display, an old refrigerator. But it just seems to be something that has been a fun practice to, blow things into smithereens. But
now, when you were last here, you were talking about how one of the interventions or one of the things that you were considering doing or trying to encourage was actually having shooting ranges.
Right, and that's still a part of the whole kind of political process here. I think that since we installed that sculpture, that piece of field work, and we've harvested the ammunition, which was then taken and made into a display to kind of illustrate the fragmentation of lead-based ammunition, the sculpture is displayed outside of the Taos Center for the Arts in the Stables Gallery Courtyard for public consideration. We also have a comment book there and a little description of how the piece came to be, what its intentions were, and with a footnote saying that it is now kind of poised to become perhaps a piece of leverage to make a case to the our elected officials, the county commission in Taos, and that perhaps after the show and everything's down, I think it would be a good way to reapproach our elected officials just to kind of hearken the need. Ultimately, that sculpture provided a great visual reference to a community need.
What did you find when you analyzed that sculpture and the ammunition that was harvested?
Well, essentially you had to go through with, beginning with needle nose pliers, kind of pulling out the lead from the scattered fragments of plywood and other metal that had fallen. We had roofing material, corrugated metal, to collect everything that didn't end up inside of the walks. And pretty much as expected, we went from filing some whole projectiles, whole like 45 caliber lead rounds, hardly unscathed, but most of what I drew out went from a needle nose pliers to a tweezers. And that was a painstaking kind of separating the lead from the scattered wood and other fragments that kind of got mixed up with the violence of ballistics hitting these objects. And I went as far as using a magnifying glass and my own reading glasses to pick out these pieces, and what we found were, what I could pick out with a tweezers were just these minute specks of lead. I know that a lot of that also gets vaporized, which is evidence on the white gloves of the spinning hands. You can see where the lead just vaporized and spread out. And the show has only been up less than a week, so the feedback we've been getting from people who are actually shooters and hunters are, the people who are looking at this with open eyes are having an experience where they really have to reconsider an old habit, an old form of recreation at home. Then they come to realize that, the waterways aren't a great place to discharge this. And another part of approaching that part of what was revealed there was to not only approach the elected officials and continue this conversation within the community of Taos, but to approach some of the businesses that sell ammunition and things and encourage them and advocate for, alternative round, copper tips, and there's other types of ammunition that are being developed that would be the responsible thing for these businesses, at least to provide these alternatives to the lead rounds.
Some states have actually passed laws regarding that.
There's a few, and most of that's regarding birdshot in out of shotguns. I think the last state that really made a serious move to ban lead ammunition across the board was California. And I think they met with great opposition from the NRA, who put out a huge campaign to bundle the bill up in some other legislation that kind of projected the idea that ammunition was going to be banned entirely. I think a lot of people panicked, and I think at the 11th hour, that whole bill, which was, I think, 2 years ago, was voted down. And I think the NRA was also petitioning for lead ammunition makers who... There's a large industry, but what's curious is while all this is going on within our states, even the Army and the military are reconsidering the use of lead ammunition. And they've come around to it because of the extensive cleanup of this hazardous toxic waste at the old shooting range have pushed them to consider, you know, adopting different types of ammunition.
I mean, I think it's really important to mention that the kinds of toxins, including lead ammunition, that get into the bodies of birds and then eventually possibly humans, sometimes humans, and other animals, really every animal in the food chain along the waterways, cause these types of toxins cause really horrible deaths.
Very horrible deaths. I mean, what was one of the main motivations for California was the program that reintroduced the condor. They started to find condors all across the state who had died of ingesting perhaps one piece of buckshot is all it takes to create a prolonged, painful death. It affects almost every organ of the body, the kidneys, the liver, and the neurological effects are devastating and painful. It happens with every animal that ingests this, including human beings. So curious in a place with such a huge gun culture, and you look across the board, the United States, I mean, there were studies that were done to link the amount of lead in our gasolines, perhaps with the crime wave of the 80s. It affects mental health and ability to reason and to the whole emotional stability. If you have an increased amount of lead in your system, that's going to be difficult to muster.
We're talking to Scott Moore about the Beautiful Midden Project. The Beautiful Midden Art and Artifact is the name of the show at the Taos Center for the Arts. Now, one of the things that we were talking about when you were last here a couple of years ago was the particular piece of land that you mentioned, which is in Taos County and is such a target for shooting and dumping and has been for so many years, so many generations really at this point. It was privately owned, then it was going to be bought by the BLM. Who owns that land now, and how is it managed?
Yeah, well, that did. It was owned by a bank for a while after the property went into foreclosure. And as you know, the Rio Grande Norte National Monument, when that kind of became a fast-track movement for the BLM, the plot of land that we called the Beautiful Midden Site was adjacent to that and already had some trails. And so through the circumstances, some of it coincidentally, that half of that land, at least up to the arroyo where cars and trash was still continuing to be dumped in, was purchased by the BLM. I think it was an agency that really had the proper resources to convert a lot of the area to produce a real trailhead and a parking lot and establish a beautiful trail down to the confluence of the Rio Pueblo and the Rio Grande. With that said, they are still negotiating with a different private landowner. I think a lot of the rim along the Rio Grande and the Rio Pueblo de Taos are owned by developers. They were bought long ago with the prospects of building houses and creating new neighborhoods. At this point, with the economy the way it is, most of that has stopped. And I think the BLM is now really interested in kind of joining a lot of that land along the river's edge. For one, it's important to create a wildlife egress, even if there is property. There needs to be some space away from the edge of the canyons and the waterways for allow the elk herds, the bighorn sheep herds, I've seen both of them out there, and the numerous raptors and bird life and everything that comes here. So I think that's still in negotiation. The last I had spoke with some of the people of the local BLM office there. But I think it's a good plan if they can get the resources and put that together and negotiate with these landowners to protect those canyon rims. I think it would in the long run just be a winning idea and movement for everybody.
This project, The Beautiful Midden, is not only the things that you described, namely the sculptures and the pieces that have been shot up and bullet residue and so on has been harvested, but there's also a lot of documentation, and there's a lot of action. There's student-driven engagements. There's a lot of education that is a part of this, and you're really engaging young people. Tell us about that part.
Yes, the Beautiful Midden has always wanted to be a multifaceted kind of project, and the educational component has just always been right at the top of the list. Aside from having a general community conversation through the local media, forums, vigils that we hold, we've been working closely with the Taos Municipal Schools, some of the grade schools, and predominantly in the last 3 years, Fiesta Grande High School in Taos. And some of those projects have synced beautifully into their the current art and activism curriculum that they had already established. One of the first things we did was take a group of sophomores out to the original Beautiful Midden site. We had a look, we had a discussion, we kind of thought about how this happened. We harvested some trash there and we brought it back. We did a few improvisational sculptures at the site. And then we also asked the students to go out and bring some trash from around their home. And I think even more than looking at these beautiful degraded sites, when they had to go out and consciously open their eyes and see how much debris was around their neighborhood, that's when I really seen fires light up. That's when I seen these students come in the next morning and really be angry and then become invested. Because I think when you grow up in an area where some behavior is happening, it's hard to look at, you can find an easy way not to look at it. When the students brought this stuff in, that's when the conversations started, and we proceeded to make a 20-piece, a 4-foot by 5-foot mural. Each student had a 1-foot by 1-foot block. Collectively, they came up with the slogan, "Trash is like a disease. It spreads everywhere." They wrote it out, and then they transformed matter was what I witnessed. They broke the trash down. I brought in an anvil, tools, pliers, drills, hot glue. We broke it down. We essentially looked at it as a pallet and then reassembled this really gem-like board that was pretty special. They were very pleased with that. At the end, collectively, they had to create a graphic image that the words had to jump. They had to figure out how to do that together. But it wasn't going to end there. I thought it was important now that they had created this powerful message and in a very beautiful way to have the opportunity to present to the Taos County Commissioners. And with the help of Commissioner Gabe Romero, he was very supportive of the idea and the project and allowed the students to have a morning to present through poetry, through video presentations, just simple statements, their dissatisfaction with what they had witnessed, and they were really appalled and found it unacceptable that this is what they were about to inherit. So it was a fairly good scolding and a great way to put forth and start an initiative, a serious look at the problem, and bringing together the judicial system, the Taos County Sheriffs, the Taos County Solid Waste, who we've been working very closely with for the last 3 years. So at that moment, I think a lot of things started to transform. I mean, the nature of the Beautiful Midden Project is transformation. And since then, you know, it's a very old problem, but I think with a continued education, I think that with the youth growing up and even having an inkling of their responsibility is one thing, but when you give the youth a chance to feel empowerment by speaking to the adults and really sharing what they saw, that was something that I hope will last a lifetime.
What kind of actual legal changes would you like to see, both in terms of new laws or rules and in terms of enforcement of existing ones?
Yeah. Well, I think since all this has started, the original ordinances that were in place were just had no teeth. And because of the lack of resources within the county and the solid waste department, it was hard to enforce those. I think Director Edward Martinez at the Solid Waste Department took a page out of the Taos News last year and published the ordinance. The Taos County Commission has made another position available for a code enforcement official to patrol these areas. And also what has happened is this closer relationships with the sheriff and the judges there who are willing to prosecute. There are fines and everything that have been on the table for years and years. So I see that as a very positive community effort to bring kind of, which for this problem in particular were very dispersed kind of agencies, but now are looking to serve together. The beautiful Midden is in there doing their thing to look towards the future and consider what additional changes could be made policy-wise. It's one thing that has come to my mind, and it would have to do more with the town of Taos and perhaps offering, they offer one day a year where people can bring appliances and furniture and larger things to the dump. I think ultimately that gets missed by most people, and one day a year is hardly sufficient enough to keep all of that stuff out of the arroyos.
Yeah.
And so perhaps a curbside pickup program, even once a month, I think would help abate some of the intensity of this dumping and need to avoid the landfills and the transfer stations and all of these other ways of receiving and dealing with the trash properly. They're in place. There's language barriers. There's all different levels of disenfranchisement and poverty. Once again, I think that keep people away from thinking $12 or $10 a month is too much to deal with our trash.
Scott Moore is an artist and activist, and we've been talking about the exhibition Beautiful Midden, Art and Artifact. It's at the Taos Center for the Arts. It runs through the 24th of September. Scott will be giving a gallery talk on Saturday, September 19th at 3 o'clock, followed by a short performance. The center is open Tuesday through Thursday from 2 to 4 in the afternoon. You can find more at tcataos.org. You can also find out more about the project at beautifulmidden.org. And, of course, check out our friends Amigos Bravos at amigosbravos.org. Scott Moore, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to Studio X for their technical support and web design.